And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here. Move the Sticks, coming off a Monday night game between the Bears and the Redskins, a game which did not feature Dwayne Haskins, a topic I think we're going to hit on today, Buck. And we've got one of our favorite guests going to join the show as well today.
Yeah, Joel Klass going to come on and join. It's always great talking to him because he has that perspective. He does the big noon game for Fox FS1, so it'd be great to talk to him about that. And then, you know, we're going to kind of take everyone behind the scenes. We're going to teach you how to write a scouting report. Everyone writes a scouting report differently, but DJ and I will kind of share our insights on how to kind of start writing scouting reports so you can kind of start your own evaluation process.
Yeah, kind of the nuts and bolts of scouting there. And I think, you know, it's advice I give a lot of people that want to get into scouting. I said, hey, look, you know, well, I'm not with a team, or I haven't got on with a college or what have you, so I don't have any experience. Well, no, look, you got Game Pass. You've got NFL Game Pass where you can get the All 22, which is what you scout off of. That's available to everybody. So go ahead and get on there and start watching players and start writing up players. You can have it on a blog. You can write them in a notebook, however you want to do it. But you can start watching players and get those writing skills honed a little bit. And we'll give you some tools with how to proceed if that's something you really want to do. Hopefully that'll help you there. Also going to talk a little bit later on in the episode about some college kids that have caught our eye as we look ahead towards the NFL draft. Some interesting names starting to pop up around the country, and get a chance to discuss those as well. Buck, I do want to, though, start here with the Bears situation and the Washington Redskins situation. These are two teams that, man, even though the quarterback situation hasn't been perfect with Trubisky, it's a team that you know has championship hopes, and they've got a roster that can compete each and every week. And then you watch the Washington Redskins and what they trot out there. It's been a long time. It just does not feel like this is a team that can go anywhere. And I mean, I'd love to get your thoughts just on when the time is right to throw Dwayne Haskins out there.
You know, it's tough because everyone's clamoring for the young guy to get out there. And when you look at the way that the other young guys around the league are having success, you do wonder why the Washington Redskins are so hesitant to pull the trigger. However, when you watch them play, though, you understand why they don't necessarily want to throw them out to the Wolves, because the offensive line has not done a great job of protecting Case Keenum. He gets knocked around a little bit, gave up the ball a few times. On the perimeter, you have Paul Richardson, you have Terry McLaurin, but you just are still lacking maybe the kind of weapons that a young player would need. And then the running game, Adrian Peterson would have been great if this was 2007, 2008, 2009. But Adrian Peterson now is a shell of what he was. And so they just don't have enough weapons to really help and support a young quarterback. So I can't understand why the front office and maybe even the coaching staff has decided to go about their business with the older quarterback, Case Keenum, as opposed to really getting the young quarterback out there and letting him kind of get the clock moving in terms of on his NFL career.
Yeah, I just, you know, I know you want to be able to physically protect somebody, and that's a little bit of hesitation there to throw Dwayne Haskins out there. But they're going to play the Giants this week, and that's the example you can look at. This Giants team did not have a ton of weapons in the passing game, a Giants team that with an offensive line that's not built to pass protect. They still made that move and got a young guy out there in Daniel Jones. I know it's just a one-week sample size, Buck. Even though he got sacked five times in that game, the same issues were there with Eli Manning that were there with Daniel Jones. But I think it looks like it's a road that leads somewhere. Every game you start Case Keenum, there's a dead end. You know what I mean? Like, this thing does not have – there's no future here. So why not start making some of those investments and let Dwayne Haskins learn these lessons? He's physically tough enough. He's going to be fine. You know, I understand you want to protect young quarterbacks. It's just different than it was when you were playing, you know, where you tried to ease guys in, and it was a long-term plan here. There's no such thing as a long-term plan anymore. Build your offense around the skill set of Dwayne Haskins, and let's go.
You know, here's the thing. I wonder if Jay Gruden is capable of being able to do that, much like his brother John. I don't know if he ever had a young quarterback that has flourished under their tutelage. And so sometimes it comes down to the verbiage and what they are, as coaches, are very, very comfortable doing, as opposed to, hey, you know what, you're uncomfortable kind of running an offense that may have some different verbiage or is executed a little differently than the way that I prefer. I'm not going to go that route. I'm going to do my system because that works for me. And maybe that's why there's been kind of the long pause and hesitation to put Dwayne Haskins on the field. But at some point of this year, halfway through, 10 games in, Dwayne Haskins will trot out there, and then they can start the evaluation process. Then I would prefer to try and take more games, but I think the Redskins kind of have a set number of games and starts that they want Dwayne Haskins to have.
And one more thing here, I want to go to the Bears side here. Taylor Gabriel, 3 touchdowns in this game, and I've been harping on this a little bit. It's been a little bit of a theme for me this season. When you look at the teams that have been successful, they've got at least one big-time speed element. We talk about building a basketball team of wide receivers. You want different skill sets, different sizes. Taylor Gabriel, you know, small, fast guy. Now, a bunch of these touchdowns were little things underneath. But he has that role for this football team as a speed element to this offense. And that is an encouraging thing for the Washington Redskins. You mentioned Terry McLaurin, how he's playing. He's another one with big-time speed. We're seeing DJ Chark do some things for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Seeing some of these young guys with big-time juice. Mecole Hardman already filling a role with Tyreek Hill gone. I just, when you look around the league and you see an offense with no real threat, no real speed guy, man, as a general manager, when you take over a team, that's like one of the pieces that should be easy to address. You can find that type of player in the third, fourth, fifth round. Just get somebody with some juice.
That's the thing. You have to have a playmaker. You know, it's funny because we can have all the creative schemes and all the motions and shifts and all that, but it's about players. It's about guys that can put the ball in the paint, guys that can create those explosive plays. And when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, Kansas City Chiefs have done that. They have fast, athletic guys, guys that are home run hitters, guys that were big play artists in college. You look at the Chicago Bears, what the Chicago Bears did last year, they went and got some playmakers. You know, they brought Gabriel over from Atlanta. They got Allen Robinson over from the Jacksonville Jaguars. This year they come and get Cordero Patterson, who's come in. They drafted Tariq Cohen to give them some guys that have some juice. And now it's about finding a way to get the quarterback comfortable enough where he can just kind of distribute the ball to those guys and let them do the work. And I think sometimes for quarterbacks, it is tough when you've been I won't say you've been coached or you've always heard like, hey, the quarterback is the playmaker. He makes all this stuff happen. It's tough to kind of take a step back and let the other guys do all the work. I think that's the beauty in being the quarterback. Like, you can throw 5-yard passes and get credit for 65-yard gains. If those guys are explosive, Mitch Trubisky and some of these other young quarterbacks, they just need to trust their young guys, trust those guys on the perimeter. They're going to make them look better by the playmaking that they bring to the field.
Yeah, and there's one thing, you know, last thought, and we'll move on here, talking about writing these reports. There's only one thing more frustrating than watching your team trot out there and lose games and face a long season ahead of you. It's to trot out there and lose games with old players. Man, you're the team like the Washington Redskins. Again, go back to Haskins. You've got Case Keenum handing the ball off to Adrian Peterson. And I know, Darius Geis, that injury, you can't control that. But, man, there's nothing that gets you excited about the future of this football team with what you're watching out there. Even when you're losing games, at least you have some hope when you've got some young guys and you're going to watch them grow and develop and you can imagine what this team can look like down the road. It's just, I'm trying to find a positive I take out of this for the Washington Redskins. I don't come up with anything, man.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's a tough situation. When you're Redskins and I'm trying to look at their, like, who are their blue guys? Like, and people would say Josh Norman, but Josh Norman, in my mind, can't play anymore. Josh Norman doesn't do anything. He fell into an interception last night that was more so by luck and just a bad mistake more so than excellent coverage. And every week you see someone drumming him on a deep route or something like that. And then when you come down the line, I don't know who their playmakers are on the front seven. Like, who's the difference maker? I love Ryan Kerrigan. Ryan Kerrigan's been a really good player for a long time in the league, but I don't know if we still would consider him an upper echelon playmaker. And so they've expended a lot of picks. They put capital into both sides, but I just don't know the return on the investment. I don't know if they've gotten the kind of returns that they thought they would get for those investments.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. We saw some good things from Montez Sweat. You know, I guess maybe if I'm trying to find the positive, I'm going to hang my hat on Montez Sweat going forward, that he's a dynamic young player that they can, you know, hopefully build that front around. But, man, you need more. You need more. And this is a theme for the Washington Redskins over the years, bringing in free agents with big names and small games. They've got to build this team back through the draft, get a young core and roll. Let them get out there and let them play. If we don't see Dwayne Haskins if we don't see Dwayne Haskins against the Giants, then something is seriously wrong there. And you either drafted the wrong quarterback or you've got the wrong coach if he's not trotting out there against the Giants next week. That's my opinion.
Wrong quarterback, wrong coach. Fire. Hot, like,
I mean, one
fire.
Or the other, right? I mean, with where the, this 0-3 team right now, it's an 0-3 team with no hope, no juice, nothing. So either the quarterback's just simply not good enough, you don't trust him, or the head coach is not capable of getting him ready to play. It's one or the other because he needs to trot out there. You can't trot Case Keenum out there. You're 0-3 football team. Let's see what this kid can do.
I mean, that's my opinion. I agree with you. You can't just keep trotting him out there because then you go to Colt McCoy and, like, what? Once again, what's the payoff? Like, what is the payoff? What does he give you long term? Yeah. So at some point, you need to put Haskins out there, see what he can do. You're already committed to. I mean,
it's a bridge to nowhere, Buck. Yeah, it's a bridge to nowhere.
Go ahead and get you a guy and see if he can play.
All right, let's get into here talking about. Actually, before we get to the scouting report, I said let's just bring in Joel. Let's bring in Joel right now. Looking forward to talking to our good buddy from Fox Sports, the face of college football for Fox Sports, one of the best in the business. Here's our conversation with Joel Klatt. All right, Buck, here he is, our buddy Joel Klatt. Joel, I want to get to all these quarterbacks because you've seen a bunch of them already this year, and I'm fascinated to hear your take. But I want to talk defense first with you. Ohio State games and looking at Chase Young because I want to get your take on him. Our buddy Albert Breer actually sent me a text on this. He was obviously an Ohio State homer, but did bring up a great point that we're going to chance – we're going to have 4 out of 5 years – where the top defensive player drafted is an Ohio State Buckeye. The Bosas, right? Both Bosas, and you have Denzel Ward, and now it looks like Chase Young. First of all, that's incredible recruiting and developing by Ohio State. But second of all, just your take on this kid.
I think he's the best defensive player in the game, college game. He's so disruptive. Every time, so when I'm, you know, there are guys that can produce. Like, let's say, so right now Chase Young has 7 sacks. There are guys that, and you guys know of these types in the NFL and college, that, like, those are the only 7 plays he's affected the game all year. You know, there are guys like that. He's the exact opposite. He affects the game in a positive fashion for Ohio State on every single snap. He's really good in the run game. He's stronger than you would think. He gets doubled all the time. And here's the thing. It's like Barry Bonds circa 2001. He gets 1 or 2 fastballs a game to hit, and he used to hit the ballpark, you know, hit him out of the ballpark for 73 home runs. Chase gets singled up like 1 or 2 times a game, and it's like, bam, sack. He beats people so quickly to the top. He's got great leverage at the top, great speed. He closes. He understands how to rush the passer. He's a terrific player, and there's no doubt in my mind that I think he's going to be the top defensive player taken. And by the way, they might have the top corner taken as well because Jeffrey Okuda on the outside is playing really – yeah, he's a stud as well. And DJ and Bucky, you'll love this. He's physical. He's willing in the physical part of the game on the outside. So they might have, you know, the top secondary player, depending on what Delpit does for the rest of the year, and the top front 7 player. And if you go back over 4 years, they've had more defensive players taken in the first round than anybody in college football. You know, 8 over the last 4 years. That's more than even Alabama. No, it's not.
That is an unbelievable run. Quickly, I want to go back to Chase Young because you talk about him being the number one defender, maybe the number one defender in college football. Quickly, if you had to compare him to the Bosas, Joey and Nick, where would Chase kind of fall in if we did a comparison of the 3 of those guys?
This is going to sound crazy, but you would probably value Chase a little higher because he's got more length. You know, those guys were so explosive, guys. And you know, and DJ, you see it every Sunday. The leverage that the Bosas play with is incredible. And it's Nick, stupid. Maybe even more so than Joey because of how low he can play to the ground. So Chase doesn't quite do that, but his leverage is something, and that heightened length is something that's so valuable. And yet he moves so well in space as well. I would probably say it's comparable, but very different. And the deal is that Chase, I would say, is just a longer, smoother mover, and those Bosa brothers were probably just more explosive in short areas.
I want to go to the quarterbacks now. Enough defense, okay, Joel? Let's get back to the offensive side of the ball. Looking at the quarterback position, I mean, maybe I guess you have to say the most intriguing, you know, college football storyline is the Oklahoma quarterbacks. I mean, you go number one back-to-back years, and then you bring in Jalen Hurts, and it was almost like, okay, well, that, you know, their string of not only number one overall picks, but first-round picks, and maybe even draft picks. Maybe it's all over. Now you bring in Jalen Hurts. They're just going to run him around a little bit, change their offense. And then I flip on the TV, and I'm like, nope, that's the same Oklahoma that we've seen.
Right.
Just keep ticking here.
Right.
I mean, tell me about just your opinion on the growth you've seen from Jalen Hurts, and what do they say about him there at Oklahoma?
Okay, so the growth has been outstanding. He's a different player than he was at Alabama. And I think a lot of that has to do with what you're asked to do, quite honestly. Guys, we know that there are certain coaches and systems that require a quarterback to play a very specific role. And that role tends to be, you know, don't turn the ball over, make sure that we're making correct decision, a punt is a good play, so on and so forth. And when Jalen was the quarterback at Alabama and actually starting, they were more in that mold than what they are now. Remember, they kind of morphed with Tua into what is now an offense that's going to sling it around. And last year led the nation in touchdown passes with 52. So Jalen feels a little burned by that. And he wants to prove that if given the freedom to go cut it loose, he can do similar things. And Lincoln talked to me a lot in the spring about trying to get him to free himself from that style of play that was constantly trying to be conservative into a mold where he's going to go out there, cut it loose, and try to make big plays. And he's done that, and he's done that really well. And he's taken that upon himself to put himself in that mode. He's very different than the previous two Oklahoma quarterbacks. He's more of a between the tackles runner than those two. So they're planning quarterback runs to a greater degree with him than they have in the past. Twofold. One, he's a little more sturdy in particular than Kyler Murray. He's very athletic, but also they're very happy with the depth behind him and Tanner Mordecai as well as Spencer Rattler. So I know that sounds kind of like gladiator-esque, that kind of like, hey, we're okay if he goes down, but that's one of the things, right? I mean, that's why Ohio State's not going to put Justin Fields in a position to get hurt because they don't have depth. Meanwhile, Oklahoma does. So you're going to continue to see Hurts in that quarterback designed run. The one thing that I do find interesting is that as Kyler and Baker perform in the NFL, that is going to affect positively or negatively Jalen Hurts' stock, depending on how they develop. We've talked about this even right before we started here. Guys, Oklahoma gets guys wide open. I mean, Lincoln Riley provides some absolute bunnies for his quarterback, and he's brilliant at doing that, and he needs to continue to do that. That's not available to you at the next level. You got to step in and make really tight window throws on time and on target. You know, that's the equation I always use, on time and on target. And that's the one area that I think Jalen needs to grow with, because when I used to watch Kyler and Baker, man, that ball was out. They used to throw the ball on time. They were accurate. And Jalen still holds it for a beat. And right, listen, that's not a knock, right? He's only been in this system for a few months now. So he's starting to learn, and the timing is usually the last thing to come into that. So he's certainly a terrific player. And if I had to vote right now, I would vote him as my Heisman Trophy winner. I know that sounds crazy, but that's what I would do.
No, he's balling. Yeah, he's balling.
He is absolutely balling. And one of the common denominators that has typically taken place when one of the Oklahoma quarterbacks wins the Heisman, they have a talented wide receiver that makes plays for them. Mm-hmm. CeeDee Lamb is a big-time player. What have you seen from him when you watch the tape?
Well, right now, not a ton because there's so much coverage rolled to him. But in general, Buck, he's a guy that I thought last year was actually a more consistent wide receiver than even Hollywood. Hollywood was a phenomenal player, and he is playing great with Baltimore, and he can take the top off the defense. But when you need that big third down catch, when you need a guy that understands space, time, the ability to catch the 50-50 ball in traffic, strong hands, CeeDee Lamb was the guy that they went to. And he will continue to be during the course of this season. Like I said, coverage has been rolled to him so significantly during the first portion of this season that he's not got the production that some of the other great receivers around the country have gotten. But it will come. There's no doubt about it. His ability to make plays in tight spaces, I think, sets him apart, even from some of the other great receivers around the country. Because as we know, in the NFL, that's virtually every catch is some sort of contested catch. And you've got to be really strong at that catch point. DJ, you and I have talked a long time about the wide receivers that are successful in the postseason. And when you look at the catches that are made in the postseason, very few times are guys running free down the field, easy go routes, so on and so forth. They are tough, contested, over the middle, third down, at the markers. Do you catch it or do you not catch it? And for me, in my money, CeeDee Lamb is one of the best in college football in that moment. And that's what I'm expecting during the course of the season as this thing rolls along.
Well, I want to ask you more about some players as we look at them at the college level and how they project to the NFL. And we don't really usually get into the whole, you know, game by game, what's going on with teams. But selfishly, what is Michigan? Please explain.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Oh, my gosh. That was like, I feel like you just pulled a pin out of a grenade and handed it to me right there.
I said it was more embarrassing than App State. I thought, you know, and I went to App State, but yeah. I thought App State, look, we had an undersized, fast team. We ran around Michigan, and they could still hold on to their pride that we're big and physical and strong. This is what you do, and Wisconsin pulverized them at the line of scrimmage in that game.
It was not even close. Okay, so I did last year's Ohio State game. You know, they gave up 60 points. I can almost explain that away. One of their starting corners was hurt, and they were going up against three guys that all ran sub 4.4 in the NFL Combine. They were trying to run man coverage. That's just a bad matchup, you know, and you kind of tip your cap. They still scored over 30 points, you know. I mean, really bad matchup. Then they had some starters sit out in the bowl game. They got beat by Florida. But this – I got to tell you, they threw the baby out with the bathwater as it relates to their offensive system. I know that they think that, you know, this caters more to who they are from a quarterback and wide receiver standpoint, but they have completely lost their identity on the offensive line. Their offensive line play was atrocious last weekend, and I was trying to point that out as best you can on a television broadcast, which is difficult to do in general, as you guys know, but the quarterbacks were getting hit on virtually every single passing snap. Granted, they held the ball a couple of times too long, but I mean, simple stunts that Michigan couldn't pick up, running into each other, not staying on blocks. They couldn't run the football. It was borderline a travesty of what we saw out there. And eventually the defense, I just felt like kind of like it was Katie bar the door. You know, they were like, well, our offense sucks. You know, what are we going to do standing in there against Tyler Biotish and these Wisconsin offensive linemen? And Wisconsin just killed them. They pulverized them. But here's the other part that I think is getting overlooked because Michigan sucks the air out of the room in the conversation. I think Wisconsin's really good. Guys, like really good. The defense is sensational. There's a guy that I think could project in the early first round. Jim Leonard's a stud. And Zach Bond, the outside linebacker, I think he's a guy that we're going to be talking about in April that's a potential first-round outside rusher. He's really, really good on their defense. Meanwhile, on the offensive side, I think the best running back in college football is Jonathan Taylor. And when they have any semblance of balance, they're really dangerous. And Jack Cohn, their quarterback, when you watch him play, he does a couple of things really well. Okay, so when you're Wisconsin and you're going to just run the football and run it as much as they do, you've got to have a quarterback that can get you back on schedule if and when you're in second and 10, third and, you know, 7+. This dude throws the ball on time, on target, every single time they're off schedule and gets them back on schedule. He can take shots down the field. He was really smart with the ball. He's got enough athleticism that when you play cover two man, he took it and exploited that for a touchdown. Wisconsin's going to be a tough out. I got to tell you that I was way more impressed with Wisconsin than I think most people are alluding to around the country. And this is what, you know me, I'll get on a tangent. This is what drives me nuts about college football polls. If you were to actually just evaluate the play on the field this season, Wisconsin would be in the top three in the country. There's no doubt about it, you know, but we allow ourselves to be, we beholden to our preseason predictions and biases, and Clemson wouldn't be the number one team in the country if we were just evaluating games today. Trevor Lawrence has been pretty average, to be honest with you, and Wisconsin's defense is sensational, number one in the country. They got a great running game. So, them in Ohio State, I think people are overlooking right now.
All right, this is like a little selfish thing about Wisconsin. I'm trying to figure out, like, Joel, like, everyone on the outside always talks about how Wisconsin doesn't have athletes. They don't have this. They don't have that. But every year they seem to be a team that's vying for the Big Ten title. What is it about Wisconsin that enables them to be a team that always gets it done or is close to getting it done without having A-level talent everywhere?
Well, that's a great question. They are uniquely aware of exactly how they want to win football games. That is an underrated trait throughout the sport, either level. And everybody has about the same schematics, but there's an understanding of who your team is, how you're going to recruit. And so when you look at how they recruit based on what they can recruit to their school with their, you know, local recruiting base, they can get offensive linemen. They're always going to get a good running back. They need to find a serviceable quarterback that can keep them balanced to some degree. And then they kind of piece together these defenses with undersized yet fast, quick, aggressive secondary players. And then those edge players at Wisconsin are always, always under-recruited overachievers with high motors on the edge. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, that when you guys are evaluating Wisconsin, that's always
– they play so hard.
Their edges are always really firm. They have the best edges in college football, I would argue, because of the style of defense that they play over the years. And so – to me, it comes down to identity, Buck, you know, and they know exactly how they want to win, why they end up winning, and then they employ that blueprint as well as anybody out there. And then also, I think Paul Christ is an underrated coach, and partly because he's not a big personality, but he's a really, really good football coach, knows what he's doing. They've got a good staff. They don't generally lose assistant coaches. Their staff was intact from a year ago, so – and then Jim Leonard, I think, is a star. He brings that a NFL style defense in there. And eventually he's going to be a head coach pretty soon. I would actually be really surprised with his background. Guys, you might know this better than I. He's going to get an opportunity this offseason, either in college as a head man or in the NFL as a defensive coordinator. I would be really shocked if someone in the NFL didn't look at him and say, hey, with his background, what he's doing at Wisconsin, we could certainly use a guy like that.
Yeah, I was around Jim with the Ravens. You know, he was there with Rex and all those guys. So that whole, you know, Rex Ryan, Mike Pettine, DT, Bucky's buddy, Dennis Thurman was there at the time. There was a lot of great defensive coaches that went on to become head coaches and quality defensive coordinators in the NFL. Vic Fangio was even around at that point in time. So Jim's been around a lot of smart football guys and was a great player as an undersized player there in the secondary during his NFL career. So I'm with you, Joel. I think he'll get a shot as a head coach in college or he'll be a coordinator at the NFL level very quickly. I won't keep you too much longer. I do want to ask you about Joe Burrow. I know you get a chance to see LSU in person live, but obviously knowing all the folks at Ohio State and studying the college game as you do, just how shocking – you talk about the transformation of Jalen Hurts. But just this is – you talk about not taking a small leap here for Joe Burrow. This is like a totally different dude the way he's playing this year.
Yeah, I think that one of the things when it comes to quarterback play that we don't talk about enough is development, one. And then also, who's your coach?
The
marriage and relationship between fit and play at the quarterback position is – it's like hand in glove, you know. And so when Joe Brady came from the Saints to be their passing game coordinator, I think that was a big deal because it was so elementary what they were trying to do in the passing game for LSU. And again, one of these programs like don't turn the ball over. We're going to run it. We're going to play great defense, so on and so forth. And they've transformed into a team that's going to use their athletes on the outside. And then also when I do talk with people at Ohio State that were around Joe, they said, listen, we would have been thrilled with Joe Burrow as our quarterback. Dwayne was just better. And guys, you evaluated Dwayne Haskins. He was one of the great throwers of the football that we've seen in college in a long time. So this is one of those embarrassment of riches where it's like Joe Burrow was not a bad player. He got beat out by a great player. Then he got into a system where he did the best he could last year. Now he's got a great fit with a coach that brings an NFL system from a passing game standpoint to LSU. And he's flourishing. And it's his second year really as a full-time starter. I always thought that that second year, that growth that you get from about the ninth start of your career on is when you really start to understand the game. And that's what we're seeing with Joe. You couple that with the athletes that they have, and also they need it. They're not the same on the defensive line and on the defensive side. So this is a point where it's kind of need-based. They're not going to be beating Alabama 17-14 this year. If they're going to beat Alabama, it's going to be 48-45. So it's also a need-based type of thing.
You know, Joel, like last thing for me, I know you haven't had a chance to really see Alabama up close and personal, but everyone is fascinated by the quarterback, too, and how they've opened up this offense and really given them the keys to the kingdom. When you look at Tua, when you look at this offense from afar, what do you see when you look at Tua?
I see a guy that understands where to throw the football. He's very accurate. He throws the ball on time. He throws a terrific deep ball, and he's got elite wide receivers on the edge. And these guys win in a hurry. I mean, they are really good. And there's some great wide receivers out there. You know, Laviska Shenault at Colorado is a great wide receiver. CeeDee Lamb is a great wide receiver. You know, Colin Johnson at Texas.
Ohio State's got like nine.
Ohio State's got some really good wide receivers. But I would say, I mean, even Michigan, they've got three really good receivers. But as a group, just the explosive, that Alabama team, I wouldn't know where to start from a secondary perspective. So on every play, he's going to have at least two elite wide receivers with an unbelievable favorable matchup. And he exploits that, and they allow him to do that. So that's what I see from their offense. Now, their run game is not what it has been in the past. Their defense is not what it's been in the past. They're young. They're banged up in the as far as injuries go. And so this is a different team, and a team that's going to have to outscore some folks. That LSU-Alabama game is going to be the most interesting and unique LSU-Alabama game that we've ever seen. Because like I said, it would not shock me.
We're going to stay awake.
If we're going to get into like a Big 12 style shootout, and it'll be hilarious to me, all these people in the SEC that, you know, just rip on the Big 12. When LSU Alabama is 52-49, they're going to be like, that's the greatest game we've ever seen.
Oh, it's so good. Well, hey, Joel, I do want to get on a serious note here as we wrap up, because, you know, we've known each other for a long time, and you always, you know, you feel like you know somebody and the path that they've traveled. But you might not know what's going on, you know, kind of underneath there. You know, the struggles that exist, the trials and the tribulations that they go through. And I was, you know, trying to listen to some other things, see if I get ready for this interview, and trying to learn more about Joel. And honestly, Bucky, I'll be honest with you. When you listen to this clip right here, I had no idea how difficult his life really has been. I think if you roll the clip, we'll get a feel for that.
It's such a depressing moment because I'm so excited for the season, right? I really am. And I love what I do. But I walked away from the course when was it? Friday. When it was – and I was like, this is it. This is it for a while.
My handicap is about to explode.
Yes. And so, you know, I might play, I would say, between – I don't know, 4 and 6 times the rest of the football season. So it's definitely sad.
Yeah, there you go. That's from the clubhouse with Shane Bacon, the podcast there. And that's that tells you. I mean, see, Joel, I didn't know you were going through this, man. The fact you can only play a limited amount of golf during the football season, I'll be praying for you, man. You're in my thoughts.
I appreciate that.
My Pinehurst. I have one golf shirt. I wore it for you, my Pinehurst.
You did. That's really nice of you.
Just for you.
That's a nice. Just for you. I've not played Pinehurst. You know, sadly, I know we're poking fun. That's absolutely true. I almost shed a tear walking away. Guys, oh man, the golf course is like a sanctuary. I love it so much. Yeah, I haven't been able to play much.
You did a great job, buddy. You did a great job on the coverage. I don't watch a ton of golf, but here's how I know you did a great job. Because when I flipped and I heard your voice, I was like, okay, friendly voice. And then I don't know anything
friendly
about
voice.
Golf. You really actually sound like you do. You really, if you faked it. If you don't, you really faked it well, man. It was impressive.
Listen, there are some things that I fake. We all do in this industry at times. You know, you go on a radio interview and like, well, you know, listen, you know, somebody, you know, texts you and you're like, hey, can you go on with, you know, Bart and Jimmy in Tennessee? And then they ask you some obscure question about, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about the long snapper.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, and you give some really, you know, answer about like, well, you know, it's really about working hard and having a sense of urgency. And you know, you start throwing out the cliches. So we all do that from time to time. But I did not have to do that with golf. And the reason is I play copious amounts of golf in the off season. It's like the day after the draft, I'm at the course every single day. Oh man. So there you go.
That is so good. That is so good. Hey, so hey Buck, funny. You know, we can have a little prayer vigil for him. We'll
yeah.
Praying for him that Joel can
right.
do this football season.
That's right. Hopefully
and his handicap remain intact by the time he can get back out there on the course.
So funny.
Well, that's the problem is I don't play enough for the handicap to adjust, but then my game gets worse. And then this is what you really got to pray for me. When I do get back on the course, I'm giving too many shots from where my game is at. So my wallet just gets killed the first month.
Oh, that is awesome. Hey, buddy, it's great to catch up with you, man. I know you're hopscotching all over the country, chasing these great college football games, which everybody can see on Fox. I love what you guys are doing. You got the new pregame show leading up to those big new kickoffs. It's been a lot of fun. And you're due for some big-time, close, good matchups. They're ahead, I promise you.
Maybe not this week.
He didn't say that out loud, did he? All right. That's so good. Hey, Red Raiders, little bulletin board material. I appreciate
Guns
you,
up.
Pal. Thanks, buddy.
See ya.
All right, Buck, great to catch up with Joel. Man, he's one of the things that I love about Joel is his passion. You can feel his passion when you talk to him. He loves the college football game, and nobody works harder at it. Nobody understands it quite as well as he does. Wonderful job. I think when you look at college football and the way it's covered today, when you have guys like Kirk Herbstreit, Joel Klatt, we see our buddy Brady Quinn does a great job. Brock Huard. I love sitting on the couch on a Saturday and watching the way the game's covered. There's so many good watches where you get good football and you get guys that really are passionate about it and know what they're talking about.
Yeah, no, it's great. You know, the announcers that we have, I think, are so informative and educational. Like, I think when I watch the game, I come away learning something. Joel certainly is a part of that process. Like, his insight, his connections in terms of what he's able to kind of take from the coaches and share to the masses, his unbelievable ability to just kind of see the game as it's being played out. I love watching that game. And then also my man Gus, who kind of brings a little excitement and flair to whatever game they're in. But you're right, there are a lot of young analysts that do a great job of kind of shaping the game, and I'm excited each and every Saturday to kind of watch it and hear and learn, walk away with something that I didn't have before.
All right, this is something that I know people have asked about, and we're going to try and help some folks out here, because there's a lot of people that want to go into the scouting community or are very fascinated by it. So Buck, let's talk about writing a report. What is your formula? Everybody has a different way of doing it, but what's the way that you like to attack writing a report?
You know, it's funny. So the way that I was taught like stems from the Ron Wolf tree. And the very first thing that you have to do is when you think about that opening line, the opening line I was taught should be basically a one-liner. It should be a one-sentence summary of the player that you're talking about. And so if I was right about Daniel Jeremiah coming out of Appalachian State, Daniel Jeremiah is a dual threat quarterback with excellent athleticism, leadership, poise, and a winning pedigree. And then from that one liner.
Thank you, by the way. Appreciate that.
I mean, how about that? I feel like I should be nice. It's App State week. So then I would go from that to then really describing you in different sections. So for me, I go the quick one-line summary, like, hey, this is who he is. And the reason I put that one-line summary right there is if a coach asks me right away, who is blank, I want to be able to just have something highlighted and say, this is who this guy is, you know. Then after that, I go athleticism to me comes under that, like, a long-rangey athlete, explosive, dynamic, anything that I know when it comes to his speed, I kind of put that in there. And then I tend to, with all positions, work run game, pass game. I'll try, if I have something in the holster, like a comparison, and then I will give the expectation for what I expect this player to be for this team and in the league. And so if we're talking about, like, not you, but we go to a running back, you talk about, look, 6 foot, 225, very explosive, looks like he runs mid 4.5 speed as a runner. He's tough, physical, does a great job running inside. I think he's at his best when he runs between the tackles on these plays. Outside, he has the speed to turn a corner, blah, 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 blah. Pass game, excellent pass catcher out the backfield. Terrific route runner, can run option routes. I'll describe what kind of stuff that he does in the passing game. And pass protection, he's stout and sturdy, sticks his nose up in there. He's not afraid to put his face up in the fan against oncoming blitzers. In general, when I look at this player, he reminds me of whoever that may be, Brian Westbrook, blase, blase. I can see similarities in their game because of their frames and whatever. In a perfect world for us, he comes in, he's a starter right away, he contributes, he ends up being one of our blue chip players down the line in the league. I could see him being a blankety, 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 blank. That's kind of how my reports go. Like, to try and be short and sweet, try and eliminate a lot of the fluff, but you just want to get right to the point.
No doubt. And in the actual scouting report, and we have to fill these out on the computer, there's a lot more information that goes in that. And then at the end of the scouting report is what we're discussing right now, which is your summary. And so when you're in meetings, I know we did it a little bit differently, Buck, so we would actually read our summary over every player in the meetings, whereas some teams would just kind of have an informal discussion and it was all there on the form and on the paper. But when you fill out all the information, when you're in the meeting, for the most part, you're just reading your summary.
Yes.
And so to me, the summary, this is how I approached it, and we were given a little bit of freedom and a little bit of leeway to be able to kind of be creative of how you wanted to do it. But the way I did it, this is how I started. I started every report with the number of years a player has started. So, you know, Bucky Brooks is a three-year starter. Then it's the position. He's a three-year starter at wide receiver for the Tar Heels. So that would kind of tell you, okay, this is he started this number of years at this position at this school. And then immediately I would go from that to where he lines up. Now, if you're, you know, you're a, you know, off the ball linebacker, he's a, you know, he's a, he lines primarily lines up as the nose tackle in this defense. He's primarily a slot corner, but just give you a visual. Okay, I know how many years he started. I know what position he plays. I know where he lines up. That's how I start every report, so that if somebody reads my report and they want to watch that player, as soon as they get to play one, they know where he's going to be. So they know where to find him. He's the right corner. So they can find him on tape. And then I would go into the build and the body type. So, you know, he's a tall, lean, athletic, you know, wide receiver. He's a, you know, a long, long-levered, high-waisted, you know, whatever, offensive tackle. So you kind of give a visual and, again, paint that picture of what his build and body type looks like. That's at the top, really, of every summary that I do. And then we start getting into the football. And the way I have done the football part of it is, with it being a passing league, I always just thought it made more sense. Let's describe what this guy does in the passing game. I don't care if you're a quarterback, a running back, a defensive tackle, whatever. If it's a defensive tackle, all right, against the pass, he primarily is an upfield. He's an upfield rusher, relies on quickness more than strength. You know, what does he do with his hands? You know, just describing going through the play from the start of the play to the end of the play against the pass. And then I'll flip it over, and then how does he do against the run? And you start describing what you're seeing from him from the beginning of the snap to the end of the snap. So pass game, then run game. And then I like to incorporate it within those two sections. You try and do it. If you don't, then afterwards, I want to make sure in every summary I have mention of his athletic ability, how he, his movement, and then his effort. So, you know, if it, in the run game, he gives outstanding effort from the backside as chase player. You know, and you talk about his athleticism when he drops in coverage. Those are the two areas I want to make sure that I hit in every single report. And then once that's done, I'm projecting him for what he's going to do for us. So I've described what he is for his college team, and now I'm projecting what he is for us. And that really comes down to a couple different levels. Is he an immediate starter? Is he an eventual starter, meaning he is going to start, it's just going to take a little time? Is he a potential starter? meaning I think he's kind of in that limbo land. He's got a chance to be a starter. Things go right, he's got the potential to be a starter for our football team. And then, or is he a backup role player, you know, for our team? Those are the different kind of, we would call them make it grades that you're giving to a player. And that's kind of the formula that I use when I'm writing that actual summary part of the report.
So it's funny that you talk about like those things where you put them in basically four different buckets. So the buckets, immediate starter, eventual starter, potential starter, and then you had backup. I kind of put that in the developmental category. And I think it's important for listeners to know, like with each bucket, it kind of goes with round value. So when you think about an immediate starter, that immediate starter is your first round players, meaning from day one, the expectation that this guy is going to be in the starting lineup. He's better than what we have. He's a guy that should be one of our top 22, all of those things. Eventual starter kind of puts you on that line, you know, second round, maybe top of the third round, but really in the second round, meaning it may take a year for him to kind of settle in, but the expectation is in year two, this guy should be a starter for us or a key contributor, heavy in the rotation with the ones. And then that potential starter, to me, that's your third round guys. There is something about them that they may be missing, but they have the ability to overcome it. And so I can't quite pencil them in to the starting lineup because I still want to know about this key ingredient that they may be missing. But I think in time and with development, these guys will ascend. They will be starters maybe in year two, year three. But regardless, they're key contributors and they're special teams aces. And then everything below that, you talk about your backup, your special teamers, your developmental players, that fourth round and below, those are the guys that are missing a key trait or two that prevents them from being in the top three buckets. They are your guys that on day three, I want to take them. We know they need some development. Can they carve out a role on special teams or in the rotation that gives them an opportunity to continue to work on their trade while they're still contributing in games? And maybe in year two and three, they can kind of find a role. But the expectation is, it's a long investment for these guys, meaning these are developmental guys. They got to get better in practice. Maybe they can suit up and get a jersey. But the hope and the expectation is in year two and three, maybe they can find a way to stick around and eventually be contributors and guys that work their way into the starting lineup.
And no doubt. And, you know, every numbering system is different around the league. So people have grades and the numbers might be different. But really, truthfully, you're talking about those same buckets we're mentioning here. Don't get carried away with a number. If you're just getting started, you create your own numbering system. Whatever number you want to put on those different buckets and classify guys, you put them in those buckets and then use whatever number you really want to. But in terms of the overall report, that's a glimpse of the summary, and that's really, truthfully, if you're not working with a team, that's all you need. That's all you need to work on right there. When you're with a team, this is the more detail that you get into when you start using the numbering system that you will put on all these position specifics. And this is all the different. Like, give you a wide receiver example here. Mm-hmm. With Bucky, haven't played the wide receiver position. At the top of the report is a box for background. So this is where you're putting where he went to high school, you know, if he ran track in high school, what his times were, you know, yada, yada, yada. What is he majoring in college? What's his GPA? That's background. Then you get into character, which is you're talking to all your different sources on a school visit and getting the background about him. What's his personality like? What's his, you know, all those different factors. The mental side of things. How does he learn? What is he? How has he done in school? How does he learn football? Does he learn visual learner? Whatever. Then you get into work ethic, and that's where you get a lot of stuff from the strength coach. Get all his strength numbers, how hard he works. That's kind of in that overall background section. And then you give him some general grades here, which is whatever numbering system you use. Learning, durability as an athlete, work habits, character, toughness, coachability, leadership. So that's all kind of in, you know, kind of in a background type area. Then you get into the position specifics. So for a wide receiver, these are the different grades you have to put on guys. It was size, production, toughness, dependability, release off the line of scrimmage, quickness in and out of breaks, play speed, routes, hands, concentration and traffic. How does he adjust to the ball? Can he fumble, take a hit, basically contact strength, run after catch, third down value, and then effort and finish as a blocker. So I mean, that is a lot of information you're plugging in there. But at the end of the day, your summary is what kind of takes the morsels from those spots, and that's what kind of paints the picture for the player. But I wanted to give everybody, Buck, an idea of how much detail you have to go to when you're working with the team to collect information.
It's funny that you're talking about, like, painting a picture. I think the best way that it was described to me when I was coming up and learning, you want to paint the picture. I want to be able to sit in the other side of the room, and without the film going, I want to hear DJ reading his report and be able to visualize who this player is. And so with the adjectives and descriptions and those things, it's really important that you paint the picture. And then when it comes to the other stuff, because, like, it's one thing to get the summary right and to have all of that, but the background information and the character stuff is very, very important. Being able to take the information that you get from the strength coach, the trainers, if you're still able to talk to the trainer, the pro liaison, and then
academics,
academic advisor, anyone else around the program, those things need to be included in the report, because our exposure to prospects is so limited that you're really leaning on the opinions of others when it comes to really shaping the background of the player. And so you need your area scouts to really do the heavy lifting when it comes to that. They have to ask the right questions. They have to know and build relationships. That's why some teams prefer their scouts to live in their areas, because they can always go to those schools. The people get comfortable seeing you there. It then opens up a gateway of communication that allows you to get a little more than some of the other scouts. And it's important, because those relationships are going to give you an opportunity when something happens. It's going to allow you to pick up the phone and be like, hey, man, what's going on with this kid? We got some last minute information. Like, give me the scoop. And they'll give you that. And so it's just really important. As much as we talk about the summary, the way the league is shifting now, everything is about the character. And everything is about the background stuff, how they learn, who are their centers of influence, meaning – we used to always ask this question, hey, when we draft you, who is coming with you to the city? Girlfriend, yeah. Mom, dad, family members, who are going to be the people that are very, very influential in the way that you act and around you? All of that information is gathered from the conversations that you have on campus.
No doubt. And that's kind of, we're talking about evaluating and putting a report together off of college players. Now, when you people ask, what about, you know, free agents, and once you're in the NFL and guys have been in the league and you write reports on those prospective players, well, you're not worrying as much about the background. That's all been handled on the college side. If there's been any arrests or anything like that, obviously you would document that in your pro system. But the pro report is basically, I joke about pro scouting. It's like, you just give me the football card, I can do pro scouting. I mean, this is apples to apples. How have they done? You know, what's their production like, right? I mean, I'm not trying to project how they're going to be in the NFL. We've seen what they can do in the NFL. Now, there is a projection in terms of how he – you have to describe how he fits with your scheme and your team and what role he's going to play. But I believe, you know, the comparisons, and some people don't like player comparisons. I do. I think with pro reports, it's essential to compare players to people that are currently on your roster. I don't want to pay a free agent to come in if he's not better than the guy I already got.
Yes.
So I'm comparing him. How is he different than a player that's currently playing this position for us right now? Is he better or worse? Well, maybe this guy we're going to let walk because he wants $15 million. Or this guy we can get for $6 million. Okay, he's not as good as the guy that we have, but he can do X, Y, and Z, and he's a little bit better in this particular area than the player that we currently have that we're going to let go. That's, to me, in pro scouting, the comparison thing is huge.
Yeah, the comparison thing is huge. In general, but you're right about the pro scouting thing. And I do believe pro scouting is a little easier when it comes to the evaluation process than college. In college, it's so much projection. I am trying to project how this guy is going to be in the league. When we're pro scouting, it's really fit in scheme. How does this player fit in our scheme? How does this player fit on our roster? How does this player compare to other guys on our roster? It is a little different than trying to see, hey, this is what Daniel Jones is at Duke. This is how he's going to play at the next level, because there's so many variables that go along with that. And so just understanding the two different roles, the two different paths of the business, pro scouting is really apples to apples. Where does he fit for our squad? college stuff is projecting what a player could be as a pro and how he also can fit and develop with our team.
And no doubt. I thought that was a good summary of the summary there of what you do when you're trying to put together a scouting report. Hopefully that helps you guys if you're interested in this field at all. And I think, honestly, I don't care if you're running a business. I think it's important that you know what you're bringing into your building. And that's from what makes a person tick to how productive they're going to be and the role you have for them. So I think that's even outside football, that makes a lot of sense. All right, Buck, how about some college kids you've been paying attention to? Who do you like?
Man, it's tough, man. I had a chance to rewatch the LSU game, and obviously the quarterback from LSU, Joe Burrow, has been killing it. I just kind of like the guy's toughness, and I can't say that, like, I went in thinking that, look, he was going to be an NFL prospect or a top NFL prospect, but the way that he is playing in LSU's offense right now, I think he is really on the rise. And I think the best trait that he might have is his toughness and his leadership ability. When you hear Urban Meyer on TV talk about Joe Burrow and how he was the ultimate competitor at Ohio State and that the competition between he and Dwayne Haskins was a nip and tuck affair. And even though he didn't win it, he left with great respect, and they had great respect for him as a player. Then he goes to LSU and he's surrounded by talent, and all he does is elevate the way that LSU has played on offense. And this year has been the prime example. The way that he throws, the way he gets the ball out of his hands, the way he has command of this offense, they're playing up tempo and really leaning on him to throw the quick game and put the ball in the hands of his playmakers. He has been killing it. And then I will say, in that same game on the other side, Vanderbilt has some interesting players, but the guy that I couldn't take my eyes off of was Keyshawn Vaughn. The running back is a terrific player, terrific playmaker, had two big runs. I like the way that he is able to kind of break out. You kind of use the term contact balance. I think his ability to kind of run through those glancing blows, those arm tackles, will serve him well at the next level. And it's one of the things that I really look for in running backs. Can you make plays when it's muddy and the traffic is around and their body's around? Can you kind of pick your way through the barbed wire? He can do that. And so I really came away impressed with Keyshawn Vaughn after watching him.
No, that's good stuff. You know, somebody, I watched him a couple weeks ago and he did run hard. I'm anxious to see, like, a guy like Keyshawn Vaughn, what's going to happen with him in comparison to Moss from Utah. You know, how those guys slot and fit. I think there's some similarities there in their games. One player that I had my eyes on the weekend, Nabil obviously knows very well the stuff he does over there at USC, Michael Pittman. Huge game there for the Trojans, over 200 receiving yards. And, again, going back to that basketball team analogy, Buck, he's going to be that power forward. And if you watch the Chargers play and see how they use a guy like Mike Williams, I think that's the type of role you'll see for Pittman. I don't necessarily think he's going to get drafted as high as Mike was picked.
Yeah.
But he's somebody that can be that red zone guy, jump ball guy. Also, just getting him vertical down the field. He's not going to wow you with his ability to get in and out. I think Mike might be a little bit better in that area. But this guy's going to craft a role for a team at the next level because of what he can do. So it was fun to watch him compete against Utah in that game with the SC playing with their third-string quarterback. And then three other names. I kind of put together a list of names after I make my phone calls, and this is on my to-do list. So every now and then I like telling you guys who I'm going to be watching so you can keep an eye on them. We kind of watch these guys together and kind of learn about them. But Tristan Wirfs, the tackle from Iowa, has got a lot of buzz talking to folks around the league, so I got to watch him. Curtis Weaver, edge rusher from Boise State, is another one that's generating a lot of buzz here with our buddies on the West Coast. And then A.J. Terrell, the corner from Clemson. Clemson has so many guys. We're going to see a wave of Clemson players drafted again this year. But in a class, it looks like it's going to be really good at corner. This kid's got a lot of buzz as well.
Yeah, look, you talk about this cornerback class. There are a lot of intriguing players in the class. And I think we're coming to a point where we're beginning to catch up to some of the offensive players. I think at the lower levels, we begin to see some of the better athletes commit to playing defensive back as opposed to just playing wide receiver. And I think that is going to fuel a run on cornerbacks in the next few years where we do see some of the better athletes playing that position. Because what had to happen in the high school ranks, you had the best athletes being your 1, 2, and 3 receiver. and then the fourth guy maybe being a cornerback. And I think we're seeing that kind of shift a little bit. So I'm excited about this class. I'm excited about the running back class. Got a chance to watch, obviously, DeAndre Swift versus Notre Dame. And the way that he is just, man, he is a dude. And it doesn't take long to figure it out. He can do whatever he wants to do at the running back position. And I'm just amazed that the University of Georgia is able to just kind of roll these running backs in year after year after year. It's really impressive. And then Alabama is interesting because there was a highly decorated recruit, Najee Harris, who went there. And Najee Harris has kind of been in the mix. He was a guy who was a critical, like a key contributor in that championship game when Tua made the throw. Najee Harris and Tua came in the late stages of that game and made some plays. Kind of fell down the depth chart a little bit last year. He's kind of reemerged as a guy. And I'll say this, just from watching him personally, like coming up the ranks, he can be a more pivotal player in the pass game than he's been used to this point. And it'd be interesting to see how he is treated in the scouting community when people have an opportunity to really work him out and kind of see what kind of athlete, what kind of playmaker he could be at the next level.
Well, you got me thinking because you're talking about a minute ago about seeing so many athletes playing corner now. You know, do you have a place where you live? Like there's a street corner not far from where I live where you get the people on both sides of the political thing that, mm-hmm. that sit out there like on a Saturday and like hold up signs, right? Whatever their cause is, whatever they're into, and they hold up signs and people on the other side of the argument, they kind of, you know, bark at each other and all this kind of stuff. Well, this is my campaign that I'm on. I'm thinking about going to this corner, this street corner, and holding up this sign for all the young kids out there, Buck. I don't know if you can see it here.
It just play cornerback. Yes.
Please.
Play
yeah,
corner.
Stop. Just stop playing receiver. Trust me on this thing. Your chances of getting a college scholarship and pursuing your football career, if you're an athlete, is better at that position than it is at wide receiver. But so many of these kids, they haven't wanted to hear it, Buck. I preach it. It's my gospel. Everywhere I go, if I talk to high school kids and I see athletes, oh, what position do you play? Oh, I play, you know, play wide out. You play corner? No, just wide receiver. Switch. Ask your coach if you can play corner. That list and that line of players at the receiver position is a country mile long, and people are starving for corners. So that's my campaign. That's my mission.
No, it's funny that you say that, DJ, because I had a coach and one of my buddies always talk about the cornerbacks and defensive backs. They have to be the best athletes on the field because they're the only players who start going backwards when everyone else is going forward. So if you think about this in Olympic terms, as a cornerback or as a defensive back, you have to be a decathlete. You have to be able to execute so many different movements that are not being asked or required at other positions. And then when it comes to trying to extend your career, meaning trying to go from high school to college, college to pro, at wide receiver, if you're just a 6 foot, 200-pound wide receiver, you're a dime a dozen.
Dime a dozen.
However, if you're those same dimensions, 6 foot, 200, and you run 4.5 or lower, you are a primo athlete at the cornerback position. You are one of the guys that we'll talk about. You're one of the guys that we'll highlight and focus on because it's hard to find 6 foot or taller corners who have athleticism and movement skills and who have been trained at the position for an extended time. So if you want to get a jump on your buddies, you want to get a jump on the curve, I would say the sooner you can commit to backpedaling and learning how to break and drive and plant and play the ball in the air and all those things, the more advanced you can be over the competition when it comes to playing that position at a higher level.
I'm with you 1,000%. I think we can join each other on this crusade to try and help kids. It really is. That's all we're trying to do. We're trying to help kids out there. I think that'll get it done. Any other players you want to talk about, Buck, before we get out of here?
No, nah, that's it. Like, I mean, we have a big game. What big game do we have this weekend? There's a big game. There's Nebraska and Ohio State. Is that the big game this week? I think that's the big game. I think that's the big game that is on TV.
Yeah, I think that's where game day is.
I think that's a big game. The reason that game is big for me is, look, everyone is beginning to buzz and talk about Chase Young. We had a discussion yesterday about Chase Young compared to the Bosas and the like. So everyone to get an opportunity to look at that. We've talked about how for the last, 4 or 5 years, Ohio State is at, the top defensive back defensive player taken in the draft, and that's quite a legacy and a tradition. But the reason why I really want to tune in is, look, and I know we're always quarterback hunting, and we're looking down the road. And down the road, there's been a lot of conversation about Trevor Lawrence. But I want everyone to tune in and check out Ohio State, and I want you to look at Justin Fields. Because when these two guys were coming out, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, it was 1A and 1B. When you and I were up at the opening, it was still in Beaverton. It was still up in Portland at Nike headquarters. Justin Fields was the star. And even though Trevor Lawrence was a head turner, Justin Fields looked like a man amongst boys throwing the ball around. And what we have seen is in this Ohio State offense, he looks like that dude that I remember when he was in high school. And the more that people pay attention to him, the more that his name will be inserted in the conversation, and it won't just be the Trevor Lawrence show. Just keep an eye on Justin Fields when he has an opportunity to play on the big stage.
Yeah, he's a special, special talent. He's fun to watch. I hope everybody does get a chance to see him. All right, remember, football's back. Watch live, local, primetime NFL games for free all season long with the Yahoo Sports app or the official app of the NFL on your phone or tablet. Plus, get all your latest breaking news, highlights, and more. Download the NFL app or the Yahoo Sports app in your app store or at NFL.com/mobile today. Certain restrictions and data rates apply. Do want to thank our buddy Joel Klatt for joining the show. It's great to catch up with him, Buck. All of our videos, NFL.com/MTS video, the YouTube channel, youtube.com/NFL podcast. You can find some goodies there as well. We'll be back in just a couple days to talk some more about the big college football weekend, as well as keep an eye on what's coming up in a big NFL slate as well. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Daniel Jeremiah. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.